I'm sat in the kitchen of BBC Radio Wiltshire with Ben Prater.
You lucky thing, Janet. Hey, what an iconic room this is.
And the tables have turned, because normally Ben is the one who's in charge, and now I am in charge with my own radio kit, which is quite scary for me.
It's very shiny and new.
It is very shiny and new. I've got a case. I've taken it out of the case to use it today. I don't know how shiny and new it will look later.
Maybe it needs to be in a waterproof case, because I did say, do you want that cup of tea that I've made you so close to your new shiny and polished equipment? You said, of course, that's fine, Ben. And we had a near miss, Janet.
We did have a near miss. So I've got some questions. They're similar questions to everybody that I'm going to ask on the project. So when did we first meet?
Well, it would have been actually for your first newspaper review, wouldn't it? Because we spoke on the phone about your wonderful project to drink as many cups of tea in as many places in your area as you could.
Yes, so the 100 Cups of Tea project.
And I think when we spoke, you were going to go up a church tower to take a cup.
The first cup for Cullen, or Cullen, depending where you're from.
Have you still not worked that out?
No, it's still under dispute. So the first cup for the Cullen Tea Drinking Project was up at the church tower. And there are photos of that on the website.
And was it all downhill or uphill from there? Down some steps?
It was all downhill from there, obviously, because it's the highest point for lots and lots of miles, the top of that church tower. And then the last cup of tea at Cullen was in the skate park. So,
On four wheels, or did you not do that?
I tried. I did stand. I had one foot on the skateboard and one foot off the skateboard whilst I had tea in my hand. I did try a little bit of skateboarding. It didn't go well.
To be fair, of all our newspaper reviewers, I'd back you to sort of multitask like that. I sense that you give many things a go, and that's why I thought, who have I spoken to recently who would really, you know, bring the place alive, come in, flick through the papers, praise some people, criticise others, throw in a few funny anecdotes about not knowing whether their kids have made it to school in the morning or not, about the Land Rover clapping out, that sort of thing, and it was you that sprung to mind.
I wonder why, Ben, I wonder why. Yeah, and I did, yes, not today, but the previous time, I did talk about my brother playing poker with the Russian mafia,
which was a good yarn.
I have the what I'm allowed to say and not allowed to say on the radio.
It is a skill, and I fail at it quite regularly, actually, and sometimes go home and see despondent children staring at me because I've just let sneak something they said, and some other parents have heard it on the radio, told their kids, and then the kids have relayed it to my kids, and it's not cool to have your dad as a local radio presenter if you're not on Radio 1. That would be cool.
Well, yeah, I guess I think they'll get better with it, whereas actually there's always the risk when you're a vicar that the kids get worse with it. So through primary school, they quite like the fact that you're the vicar and the primary school kids, but by the time they actually get to year six, they can start being a bit antagonistic. I had someone literally try to trap me to say that Father Christmas wasn't real in a year six session, and I just said, I'm not here to talk about that, because I know that can generate a lot of bad press. So I didn't do that, and it was all year six class, so they were all 11, but I could see the cogs going round in this guy's head when he asked me that question.
But your kids presumably are proud of what you do. I mean, they brought up it with a faith and enjoying the religious lifestyle.
Well, I had to fill in a form a couple of years ago, and it said, what's your main ambition in life? And I put on it that my children don't grow up hating the church because I'm a vicar. And they're kind of okay. I mean, they're quite bossy now. They're like, you should do this at church, Mum. Come on, get on with it. Yeah. But they've done okay. And I think that is different because I'm a woman. I think there's their experience. I did spend some time being part-time. My husband was at home for some of the time when I was full-time when they were tiny. So he was working part-time, I was working full. Then we swapped. But because my work is flexible and I didn't go to full-time until we'd settled where we were, so that we kind of had a network then of being able to do it. So I have been able to be there for them, apart from when I'm not. But generally that's okay. It's been rare that they phoned up and said, I need you to come and get me from school, and I've gone, I'm at a funeral.
Yeah. It's not like, and I'm down the pub with my mates, or I'm upstairs on Twitter. You've generally got quite a good reason for maybe being on the back foot.
Yeah, but we've had a great network of people where I've actually had a real group of people where I can phone and go, I've got a disaster, can you just come? And now they're kind of big enough to look after themselves generally. Yeah. Yeah. We've asked if you drink tea. You do drink tea about 50-50 with the
coffee. It's a strange thing, though. It is a strange thing, and I've pondered on this sometimes, and I don't know if it's the same for other people, but when I wake up in the morning on earlies, I would never dream of having tea. And I'm the only one in this newsroom who is like that. So it's coffee all the way through until I get home for me, normally. I'm drinking this because it obviously is nice. It's a sharing experience. but it's not until, as I said, I get home, and then I'll have my first cup of tea with a sandwich at lunch, and then generally drink tea until tea time, and then revert back to the coffee. It's a bit of a flip-flop situation. I don't know why that is.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me feel very continental having a coffee in the evening.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't drink coffee in the evening. It keeps me awake now.
Yeah, some people stop drinking caffeine from like midday.
I can drink tea all the way through, but coffee, and I need to be very sleep. I have a sleep regime, which early mornings disrupt, but only very slightly. So I'm sleep trained to sleep from 11 till 6. So if, like this morning, I got up at 5:30 to come here, so that was fine. But I didn't actually get to sleep dead on 11 either. I've got the main question for discussion in all of my podcasts is this one. So there was a comment that someone wrote in the Telegraph, probably 2 years ago now, that said Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping, and I just wondered what your views on that were.
Well, now this is interesting because I'm not religious in the sense I don't go to church every week, but I think that's part of this discussion, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really, does that count as being religious or not, or is having a faith as important? And so I just read a few articles in the last 24 hours. Because sometimes when I discuss religion, I feel like I'm a little bit like a six-year-old. I think that's why I like having you around, because you're one of, not the few, that would be unfair, but, you know, I don't know, one of about 10 people of the church I've come across who is just like talking to. There is sometimes a bit of that, I think, when you speak to some people with dog collars on, that you automatically feel like a school kid. And whenever you talk about something that you've not got huge experience of, you do recoil a bit, don't you? Because you don't want to put your foot in it.
Yeah, I mean, there are some people that I feel a bit intimidated by anyway. I mean, I always used to feel a bit kind of strange with the Bishop of Bristol, because he was technically my Lord Bishop. He didn't like it when I called him my Lord, but there you go.
Yeah. So I don't know, I mean, in terms of stats, I think generally from what I've done on the radio, you know, even though it's not a faith programme, you know, there are fewer people going to formal church. But this guy that I was reading about saying that if you compare it to, I think, the 1800s and not the 1900s, where there was a bit of boom in church going, then actually it's not doing too badly now. St. Paul's Cathedral at Easter in 1832 or something like that had 6 people for communion. I mean, that's a quiet service, even by your standard, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that is the very limit of our critical mass. If we fall below 6 on any of our services, we're going to start questioning their viability.
So he was saying what's needed is a sort of evangelism, really. And I don't know if it's the same bit you were referring to, but he said, you know, if you compare the church with Tesco's, Tesco would never kind of just say, well, people know what we're about. They'll come and shop anyway. We won't say much about what makes us so good. You know, if we say, oh, actually, our products aren't that special, they're not going to use us. So maybe the church or people who have a sort of Christian experience need to shout from the bell towers a bit more about it. I don't know.
One of the things which our stats have revealed for this year is that in Cologne, really, we had more people during the week than on Sundays in our kind of normal activities. So in our general weekday activities, so we have a Thursday service, a Friday afternoon service for children, and a Thursday toddler group. They're both only once a month, but we still had more than came to our normal Sundays over the whole year.
Yeah.
So I think there's a big thing about Sunday. In the past 10 years, it has become increasingly more difficult for me to try to persuade people to go to church on a Sunday. I don't know. What do you do? What do you do on a Sunday morning?
I go to various sports clubs. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because I am a city boy from Bristol, and have never, since we moved to a village 5 years ago, I've never lived as close to a church as I do now. So basically any journey I take out in the car or with a dog on the lead goes past the church because it's 50 yards away from my house. So I can see how important it is in the village and how many people that I either knew were part of the church group or I didn't know use the church. So I mean it's integral to a village of about 800 people, and my kids on a Saturday morning, if they're running like a sort of school church club, you know, make stuff, watch videos, they'll go to that. And there's never any kind of, on the way out, why aren't you here on a Sunday? That's never been broached. I don't know if people are thinking it. I sense people don't think like that though. I think that's me thinking that people think like that. As long as you're showing some kind of input and not just in and out in 5 minutes, then maybe that's okay.
It's really hard because one of the people that I work alongside has a real theological thing that people should be going to church on a Sunday. And I don't think like that because I think we've moved a lot. More people work on Sundays. More people work every day apart from Sunday, and so it's difficult. The children are at sports clubs. And I think we've lost the memory that actually our church service times have been always historically organised by stuff which is not really very theological. So people started having evening services later in the evening when people invented gaslighting. So if you could gaslight your church, people would go to church because they wanted to be in a warm, gaslit place. And that was kind of really exciting to be in a lit building late at night. So that had moved, and that's not a very kind of theological thing. And the other thing was that particularly through the late Victorian times and the evangelical revival that was then, was people offered education, which was not freely through Sunday schools, which was not freely available in any other way. So, I mean, I think people's motives for going to church have always been mixed, and the attraction for that has always been a mixed one. The question is now, society is so fractured, how do you cater for niches until you get to a service for one person, or do you try and work out what it is that people want to come to? That people will feed them spiritually. We've got this question at the moment, what is feeding people spiritually? That's our big question at the moment.
I suppose at home, I mean, what do I talk about most of my family? It's time, it's kind of making time. Two working parents, three kids at school, you know, we're happy and healthy. That's the most important thing. But I suppose it's a frustration that we're trying to jam it all in and life is just whizzing by. And kind of the dichotomy of it is you think you haven't got time to sit back sometimes and ease back and think a little bit more widely about what it's all about. But actually you probably have, and that's half the reason, because you're jamming your time with stuff that ultimately doesn't matter. A bit too much time on social media, perhaps. Although you're the only newspaper reviewing guest who comes in with an iPad at all times. So you don't dismiss technology in any way, shape or form, do you?
No.
But it's using it well, isn't it?
And I think that's been something which is a steep learning curve for people. And I think it's also just another kind of show of where this is split, because some people are coming off social media. So how do we reach people? Well, we reach some people through social media. We have a couple of congregations which we mainly advertise through Facebook, because that reaches that kind of core group of people we're trying to reach for that. But then there are some people who would be in that group who are not on Facebook, so then we have to make an extra effort to reach them, and that kind of whole communication is a bit of an issue for us.
When I've been at weddings, we didn't get married in a church. We fell into the kind of, it would be hypocritical for us to, which I suppose is a common thing you hear, you know. But then again, I've got friends who had no problem with that, and they certainly met you know, you or someone else 6 or 7 times, and everything, you know, worked out for them, and, you know, all fair play to them. But I've kind of thought, there's nothing I don't believe about the story. I don't. I'm not one of these that dismisses it out of hand as, you know, what a load of old codswallop. So what is it maybe that hasn't made me just take that next step, because I feel comfortable in churches and chapels and everything else. If I'm in a foreign city, I'll be one of those lighting a candle, but I've never kind of sort of dragged the family along as something to do. And I don't know if it comes down to, and I know you're trying to sort of break that down a bit, the formality that can be there. I don't particularly like when I go and pick up the kids when they went to Scouts and Cubs, that kind of standing there in unison for the flag and the oath and someone telling me what to do, or at least asking me to pave in a way. Not that I'm some kind of, you know...
Radical.
Far from it. I'm a bit too conservative. But, yeah, I quite like my own time, my own space.
Yeah. Do you have a kind of a pressure in your head to think, I need to think about the diversity of beliefs of the people who are listening? Or is there a kind of common place where you think actually most people are in this place? Or
yeah, I think maybe I'm guilty of thinking Wiltshire quite an easy county to profile. You know, and occasionally you'll do a story specifically about a smaller religion or a less prevalent religion or a group of community people or what have you, and you won't want to make a big thing of it, but you have to a point because it's different. But I just try and play it straight, really. It's a tough question, isn't it? Yeah. I try and avoid any kind of, if an email goes round, let's have a think about how many stories were this today, how many stories were that today, because I think actually if you class yourself as a generally open human being and decent person, then you're probably doing that anyway on a certain level, because alarm bells would ring if you were doing five stories all about one subject or one type of person or one type of community. It would just feel wrong, it would sound wrong, and you get complaints, I'd hope to think.
I think it's strange for me because I come on and it's not the religious programme.
Yeah.
And I don't always say anything about my faith. So last time I was here, I didn't say anything at all about God. And today I just mentioned that some of the stuff about Donald Trump and compassion I find doesn't sit easily with my faith. But I'm always a bit conscious that I need to be not telling people to go to church, although a bit of me would like to tell them to go to church, because a lot of people think that they're churchgoers and are never there. Particularly, I guess, within the kind of demographic of local radio listeners.
You just start taking a register then, don't you, Janet?
Or
does that happen already?
No, it doesn't. There's one service where I take a register, which I do when I go home, because I want to know who was there, and it gives us an idea. It's a very mobile population, that bit of my parish is where that happens. But we don't at others. And I think some people who think that they come to church come once every 5 or 6 weeks. And I think that's been a big change. But I think some of those people have lots and lots of other commitments. So we've got a few people in our parishes who are looking after both elderly parents and young children. And that really is a problem for them coming to church on a Sunday. And we've got our retireds, if they're young retireds, tend to be all off around the world or looking after grandchildren. We have some people who go every fortnight to London for 2 days to look after their grandchildren, for financial reasons for their children, which is kind of, everything's changed. Nobody's so settled anymore.
Looking at it from that angle, like you say, I mean, I suppose I would say you've got the wriggle room to be a little bit more. What's the kind of word I'm looking for? It's after a 2.5 hour show.
Yeah, words so sometimes don't. That's it now. All the words
I'm
gone.
I'm on a spiral now to oblivion.
It's all right, I'll go really soon.
You know, I think you've got a lot more room to maybe be a kind of bit more come to church, because I still can't think of the word.
And prosthetising is the word that you're looking
for.
It's a very difficult word for this time.
And I admire the fact that you don't do that, but I think you can. I think people are clever and you can be subtle without being kind of... By subtle, I don't mean brainwashing, I just mean nuanced. And, and put the seed in there to think that a lot of things do come back to that central question, don't they? Yeah. About do you belong and who's important to you?
Yeah.
And what is family life?
What's your favourite thing that begins with T?
For me, it's time with my wife and children, Janet. I couldn't say which is more important, because you can't, because it's just that kind of Proverbial bosom, I suppose. By the time I go home, I'm often tired, and it's pick up the kids from school, and it's just cherish those moments, really. I'm often told when I'm whinging about how harrowing the hours are on this program, on this job, you know, the school run, the ability to be able to pick up your kids from school. Especially for a bloke these days, I think that'll change, you know, over the years, because we're going that way, aren't we, quite rightly. If the woman earns the most money, the bloke stays at home. But I think up until this point, it's generally been that the bloke isn't there. Actually, think about my school playground, I think it's probably about 50-50. I can sometimes not keep my eyes awake when I pick them up, but I still sense this a really valuable moment. And then cooking for them, trying to make them eat good food, and bedtime stories. I love the fact that, you know, through decades, generations, some things change, but actually lying with your children, you'll know that feeling. Especially in enhanced if the wind's battering down the windows, you know, you're just lying there in the moment with them, reading books you've read about 50 times, but still there's a bond forming there.
Yeah.
And you'd hope that they'll remember that.
I mean, that's been one of the great things for me being a vicar, is that I have when they were little, I used to work effectively split shifts, so I would work 9 till 3 and then 7 till 10, and that 3 to 7 time is the time when you're home from school, you're eating, you're taking them to swimming and ballet and tap and everything. But I think that's really important. I think that's where the foundation is laid for what happens when they're older, and that's really important. And I think it's great when both parents have an ability to do that, or to share between them. That makes a real difference.
Because you can impart in those few hours so many life skills and values, can't you? You can let them help you with the cooking, or you can show them it, table manners, getting the homework done, you know, laughing around, just sort of shared experiences, you know, a bit of TV time, look at you know, social networks with them, see if there's anything bothering them at school. It's a really, really good window.
So I need to say thank you now, otherwise I don't have anything to wrap up the end of the show with. This is what I'm learning already. So thank you very much, Ben.
Thank you, Janet.
For speaking to me as one of the first recordings. I don't know when it will go out.
It's all right.
I'll let
always
you know
say
when
that with
does.
My guests as well.
Okay.
But as long as it will go out, you're not going to can me and put it in the rubbish bin.
No, it will go out.